another episode of the Access Vikings podcast. My name is Andrew Kramer, joined by Ben Gessling at the TCO Performance Center in Eagan, where the Minnesota Vikings have two new members on their roster, quarterback J.J. McCarthy and edge rusher Dallas Turner. Both of them, Ben, were frequently projected to be single first-round picks to the Vikings, potentially in a trade-up in McCarthy's case, or if the Vikings stayed put, maybe Dallas Turner at 11 overall, but they come away with both of them. There were later trade-ups. I believe the Chiefs jumped up and traded up with the Bills at one point, but the Vikings execute the first two trade-ups of the night, yet it didn't go exactly how everybody thought, right?
No, it didn't, and thank you for vamping long enough for me to finish chewing my Skittles.
Yes,
Kevin Seaver just tried to kill me with Skittles. So good that you did not. So thank you. Do I need to tell that story now?
Expeditiously.
Expeditiously, yes. We won't bury the lead too much. So Kevin Seifert was just telling a story in the media room about a time where I don't even know what the setting was, that Wayne Gretzky was asking him a bunch of questions and he was trying to write. And he kind of just kept giving him one word answers, like trying to get this guy to go away. So I take the hint. And somebody, he goes, "Who was that?" And somebody tells him, "That was Wayne Gretzky." So I said, "Wait, you blew off Wayne Gretzky?" And he just goes, "He was bothering me." So I started laughing so hard. I was eating Skittles. And my lifelong mentor who got me into this business dang near killed me. So, but I survived.
Mm-hmm.
And we are here to talk about the draft. So
you survived to tell the tale of J.J. Yes. McCarthy being a Viking.
Yes, we survived to tell the tale of the first time since 2005 that the Vikings traded into – well, no. So the first time since 2005 that they took two players in the top 20 of a draft. Only the fourth time since the Super Bowl era that that has happened. 2005, 1994 – and 1967, when the third of those first-round picks was a Notre Dame defensive tackle by the name of Alan Page. So they would take something more along those lines and not the return from the 2005 draft, which is Troy Williamson and Erasmus James.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding. I think these two prospects, let's start with the quarterback angle first. You see the first three picks go kind of chalk, right? The third pick, yep. There was some consideration of like, okay, would the Patriots actually deal it? An hour before the draft, though, Patriots coach Gerard Mayo is telling their draft party, "We're going to get a good player at number three." So it seemed like they had already known going into it, "We're not going to trade this pick."
Yeah.
They don't. They submit the pick before they run out the clock. Vikings didn't seem to have a shot at number three. Cardinals submit the pick before their clock runs out as well. Again, we mentioned the first trade-up didn't happen from 11 until 10, why do you think that is?
Well, it was interesting. I mean, the whole thing was history-making draft. First time in NFL history that 14 straight players have gone on the offensive side of the ball. I don't know if I can't remember if that's a record just on the offensive side or one side offense or defense. I would have to think that's a record for either side of the ball. I mean, I think, according to the AP story, it doubled the previous record. And again, maybe that's just for offense. Not either position. I don't know. Look it up. It's been a long night. I almost died. But why did it go that way? I mean, I think there's probably it's one of those drafts where if you didn't need a quarterback, you're like, well, okay, if we're the Cardinals sitting here at four and we can get Marvin Harrison, who could have been probably the number one pick in a lot of drafts, why would we pass that up? You probably go down the line and say the same thing about Joe Alt. You know, just on and on and on, you could say, well, there's enough talent here at other spots that you say, let's not overthink this. Let's just take the guy that we want. I mean, you saw a kind of a run there in the middle of it where teams were not really taking a ton of time to make their picks because I'm sure some of it was, hey, if this guy's here, we don't need to overthink this. I mean, even the Giants, there was all of this pre-draft chatter about them wanting a quarterback at six, which apparently was a smokescreen. They instead get a receiver for Daniel Jones, and you know, you kind of just you go from there. There's a lot of talent if you didn't need a quarterback. It's a little bit like 2011 when it was Cam Newton and then Blaine Gabbert. Speaking of draft, Viking fans are not going to want me to give parallels to Jake Locker. Obviously, Christian Ponder goes in that draft, but like everybody else that was not a quarterback in that draft is going to be a Hall of Famer. It was like Patrick Peterson, Julio Jones, J.J. Watt. I mean, there were a few others in there too, but Lots and lots of Hall of Fame level players at other positions in that quarterback class kind of flamed out. This draft, six of the top 12 picks are quarterbacks. So if you're a team that doesn't need one, you're kind of getting a bonus in terms of the player you're able to get at your draft spot. So I'm sure that was some of what contributed to people saying, let's not trade, let's just stick and pick.
Grand Casino would like to take a moment and salute the true football fan. The passion, the hope, the anticipation, that incomparable feeling of winning. Grand Casino would also like to take a moment to remind you that you can find all that anticipation, thrill, and winning at Grand Casino. Grand Casino, let your story begin.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the run of offensive players, I think we all kind of knew. I mean, this was talked about as a historic quarterback class. It was talked about as a historic wide receiver class, especially in terms of those top three guys that go in the top 10. We got to get to the headline, at least in the non-Vikings division, of Kirk Cousins getting joined by Michael Penix Jr. at number 8, because this falls in the chronological order of the Vikings sweating things out, because J.J. McCarthy falls past the Giants. You're sitting there with the Falcons at 8, and I'm thinking personally the Vikings are probably calling them wanting to trade up.
Right, because you're thinking they're not in the market.
Yeah, into that spot, and Kirk Cousins didn't think they were in the market either.
No, apparently not.
His agent comes out afterward and goes on the record with multiple media outlets and says, we were not expecting this.
Yeah.
The Vikings never would have done that to you, Kirk. They told you they were going to draft your successor.
Yeah. I mean, they basically told you well in advance what they were going to do. Yeah. And, man, there's so many tentacles to that thing, because the contract he signed in Atlanta was written in a way that you would think either they're not drafting my successor or I'm going to get paid even if they are trying to get rid of me or whatever, because he basically has 2 years guaranteed, which he wanted here. He wasn't going to get. And the third year of that deal is not fully guaranteed now, but it becomes fully guaranteed a year early. I mean, that whole deal reads like the greatest hits of Mike McCartney's deals with the Vikings. He got a no trade clause in it as well. Mm-hmm. So the Falcons have committed to him financially in a way that made it seem like they're not going to take a quarterback. Instead, they take a 24-year-old that's had two ACLs to back up their 35-year-old, or at least back up for now, their 35-year-old coming off a torn Achilles, who at his opening press conference, among other things that he said, talked about everybody being on the same page, and then said a bunch of things that may get them in trouble next year to the point where they lose a high draft pick. That's right.
Because
he said all the quiet parts out loud about possible tampering.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's unbelievable. But in the end, he's right back to the scenario he thought he was avoiding and really almost binding the Falcons out of contractually. The whole thing is just wild.
And not only that, Kirk, we're not going to get you a pass rusher at number 8 overall. We're going to get you. And the quote that his agent, Mike McCartney, I think he gave to ESPN's Pete Thamel was, I'm not going to direct quote it, but it was paraphrasing, it was something along the lines of, you know, there is confusion. We weren't expecting this. And then he ends it by saying, because they did not use the number 8 overall pick to help this year's team. And it's like, well, that's why Kirk is there. Kirk is there to win. Kirk is there to, well, obviously make money, but he's there to, hopefully, he thinks, win that elusive Super Bowl ring with a very stacked Falcons offense and a very weak NFC South division. This is not what he thought he was getting into. He thought the Falcons, like, everybody was mocking the Falcons at taking one of the Dallas Turner,
oftentimes,
number 8. One of the edge rushers that could help the really, really paltry pass rush that now Kirk is going to have to move forward without. Not to waste too much time on a Vikings podcast now about a former Vikings quarterback, but
the pass rush that couldn't take Josh Dobbs down and a win that helped move the Vikings down the draft board.
Yeah, an incredible turn of events.
Yeah.
And honestly, the most shocking thing that happened the entire first night.
No doubt. I mean, the whole thing, that was like, wait, what? What are they doing? And yeah, I mean, you almost wonder if that whole thing ends with something like the Russell Wilson scenario, where they cut him, take all the dead money, and then there's offset language, so then he basically goes and plays for somebody for a dollar because the Falcons are paying the rest of it.
Wow.
I don't know. I mean, there's a long way to go with that thing. We'll see where it goes with Michael Penix. But if you're drafting a quarterback eighth overall, I mean, this is the same thing we were talking about the Vikings. Yeah. You're going to play the guy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's just a wild turn of events in a night that had a lot of, you know, whether it's six quarterbacks and 12 picks or 14 straight offensive players, a lot of kind of unprecedented things or kind of historical firsts that happened tonight.
Well, let's get first to what we heard from Kwesi and Kevin O'Connell after the pick with J.J. McCarthy. We heard them talk about both McCarthy and Turner, but what stood out to you about what they had to say regarding the McCarthy pick? I did find it interesting that you know, Kwesi's going to hold his cards to, you know, his chest and not show too much about moving up or down, but he was directly asked that kind of stereotypical question of, is this the guy you always wanted? Yeah. And he had to go, that's a hard question to answer.
Yeah. Yeah, he did not. I'll give him credit. Yeah. He didn't come out and say something that you would expect everybody to say. I mean, I think he was honest because, I mean, we've said it. I've reported it a lot. I think the guy they really wanted was Drake May. I mean, I think he was at the top of the list. I think they liked J.J. McCarthy, but they were trying, you know, it's been reported a lot of places. We've heard it as well. They're trying to move up to get one of these guys. And maybe some of that is thinking if J.J. McCarthy goes early too, I mean, there's going to be some of those things too. But I thought the whole time, and I still think, that Drake May was kind of the apple of their eye in this draft. So that plays into some of it. I thought that was interesting. But I also thought the thing he said about, you know, you could be sitting on your couch one day and saying, man, you know, we could have traded up for this guy, could have had this difference-making player, but we hung on to a fifth-round pick. And in the end, nobody's going to care about the fifth-round pick. So, I mean, I think some of that meshes with the philosophy we've heard from him, because I think top 100 picks are important to him and difference-making players rather than the old Rick Spielman thing of, well, they're all lottery tickets. Like, no, they're not all the same. And so I think he does put a premium on higher picks in the draft, but the idea that you're going to trade this many of them, because they gave up a lot in these deals. I mean, more so the one for Dallas Turner, if we want to get into the whole price of it, but they were pretty aggressive here. And how much of that was these players? How much of it was him feeling like, hey, I need to have a win here in a draft after 2 years where the drafts were not good, you know, Jordan Addison being the only exception to that.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of production from those drafts, and you hear a lot of chatter about those drafts being something he has to answer for pretty quickly, or seats are going to start to get a little bit warm. I mean, we've heard some of those things this spring, and I don't know that plays in their philosophy, but I do think, you know, whether you're feeling that pressure or not, it's year three, and they need a lot of high-impact players in important spots. And a lot of what they did tonight was an attempt to try to get two of those positions solved.
Yeah, I think it's interesting when talking about the price of Dallas Turner. They acquired the 23 overall pick from Houston. They send a future two. And then to trade up from 23 to 17. So as we mentioned, the first defender doesn't go until 15 to the Colts, the edge rusher out of UCLA. And then you see Byron Murphy go, the interior defensive tackle. And then the Vikings trade up to that 17 spot where the third defender would be taken in Dallas Turner. They didn't want to wait. And so Kevin O'Connell said afterward, like, we had a small group of defenders that we had circled for this this run, and we wanted to make sure we got one. But what they gave up to move up six spots was an additional future third, an additional future fourth, and the remaining fifth rounder that they had this year.
Yep.
So then,
on top of the two they'd already given up.
Yeah, so then if you take into account the two that they already given up to move up future two, they gave up then essentially the future two next year, the future three next year, the future four next year, a five this year.
And the current two.
And the current two to move up and take Dallas. That's a lot.
It is a lot, and I haven't done the math on it yet. I'm very curious to do this when we get a chance, and maybe one of our intrepid listeners will just figure out the math for us. But I wonder, in terms of draft value charts, did they give up more for Dallas Turner than they did for Jared Allen? Jared Allen, I think, was a one, and there was a three in there, and I think there was a swap of late picks. Maybe there were two threes. I have to go back and look it all up, but definitely a one. I think it was like the 14th overall pick. So, but Jared Allen already had pelts on the wall at that point. I mean, Jared Allen was a proven pass rusher by the time they make that deal for him. So I would bet, and I haven't done the math yet, so maybe I'm wrong on this, but my hunch is the value of those picks for Dallas Turner, what ended up being Dallas Turner, and not maybe Dallas Turner isn't the plan initially. It's we may need this to move up to get a quarterback too, but what it ends up being, my guess would be that it is comparable, if not more, than they gave up for Jared Allen in 2008, which is certainly saying something.
That is. And boy, Dallas Turner better live up to it. And Turner's been thought of as one of the top edge rushers in this class. He was definitely the most athletic in terms of the testing that they did at the combine. Incredibly productive in the SEC, obviously, so time will tell. This guy, though, seems to be one of the best options at edge rusher you could get in this class. The question is, the price that you paid and also the intention of acquiring that 23rd overall pick. I think that left a lot of people scratching their heads of like, well, wait a minute, didn't you do that to then trade up for a quarterback? What happened? I thought it was interesting that Kwesi said tonight, he said, we wanted to make sure we were the first phone call, meaning that when other teams were looking to trade, we wanted to make sure they were calling us but first. Or even if they were looking to trade back from 5 or 4 or 3 overall up front. If they were looking back, they were looking back at the teams behind them and thought, who had the most attractive trade? And I'm filling in the gaps here. I'm paraphrasing for Kwesi.
Who can put cash in my pocket right now, basically.
Yeah. If we're looking back for the best deal, and Kwesi said we wanted to make sure we were the first phone call. And so he talked about that 23rd pick giving them options. He talked about that 23rd pick making them more appealing as an option.
Yeah.
He also talked about earlier this month, April 11th, I think he talked to reporters locally, that there's no guarantee they pick up the phone.
Right.
And so it feels like to me, the way he talked tonight, piecing it together from what he said earlier this month as well, this is not what they intended to do with that 23rd pick. It was an option. It's an option they played out. And obviously they wanted to be aggressive to get a top defender and not let the defenders fall to them at number 23. So it seems pretty obvious to me that they really wanted to be aggressive. It's just those teams in the top 10 were not willing to budge outside of the Jets.
Yeah. I mean, I think they've talked a lot about this. Kevin O'Connell has said it about needing another team to be complicit in what you want to do.
Yeah.
And they're just, my guess is there wasn't a team that was willing to do it short of, if you give us 5 first-round picks or something. And I don't know that that was the price, but I think the Patriots had made it clear it was going to take a lot, and obviously nobody got there, and maybe the price was so exorbitant that you said, this isn't worth it. I also wonder if those top three go and you're not buying the Giants as a threat at 6, maybe they weren't. Maybe they had sussed out that this is a bluff by that point. You're probably sitting there saying, well, there aren't a lot of teams here. I mean, you're always probably worried about the Broncos jumping, but there aren't a lot of teams here that are obvious spots for another quarterback to land. The surprise, again, was Atlanta at 8, taking Michael Penix, and then you're down to J.J. McCarthy and Bo Nix, who went at 12 to the Broncos. So, I wonder how much that also sped up their clock, saying, well, okay, we're down to 2 now, not 3. So we got to get some of this done before all of the dancing partners are taken out of the room, as it were.
And the number 9 pick right after the Falcons take Penix was the Bears, who did not seem eager, at least we don't know, but I would doubt they were eager to move back from 9 to 11 when the Jets at 10 were sitting there probably just as eager to jump on the Washington receiver that the Bears took. So the Bears at number 9 might not have been answering the phone for the Vikings, but the Jets eventually did to move back the one spot.
The Washington receiver who could have been on the receiving end of all the Aaron Rodgers dirty looks for not getting the hand signals that he ran with Jordy Nelson in 2014 that you haven't learned yet, you ingrateful rookie slouch.
Oh, those young wide receivers in Green Bay seem to be doing all right.
Yeah, it seems like it's worked out okay.
All right. Well, let's talk about what we heard from McCarthy and Dallas Turner tonight. We got both reporters heard from both of them on a Zoom call.
I was writing, so you'll have to tell me what they said.
Oh, well, J.J. McCarthy talked about getting interrupted by Wayne Gretzky. This is why the Wayne Gretzky thing was popping up.
This is why I almost died.
So this all comes back full circle. He apparently met Wayne Gretzky through a marketing rep or something like that. And Wayne Gretzky reached out to J.J. McCarthy after their national championship win against Washington, speaking of Washington.
Yep.
And that's how they kind of hit it off. And apparently,
after beating out Dallas Turner in Alabama in the semifinals.
That's right. And apparently Wayne Gretzky was reaching out to him this evening of the NFL draft to congratulate him. And so he had to swipe on his phone while he's doing a Zoom call and apologize to reporters that, sorry, Wayne Gretzky's trying to reach out to me as a 21-year-old kid. And he did make some joke about coming to the hockey state and trying to fit right in. But
It's even better than the time that Zim was trying to flex when he showed us Dion was calling him during a Zoom call back during the COVID years.
That was before Dion was the Colorado head coach.
Yeah. It's like, those are both pretty good. I mean, in terms of a flex, in terms of a legendary athletes.
Like, sorry, Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Rather than like my former coach.
Yeah, Wayne was retired when this kid was born.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. I don't know anything about hockey.
Well, 03, the kid was, he was born in 03.
Yeah.
I don't remember when Gretzky retired. I think he would have been retired by 03. He was the GM of, maybe that was, no, it was 2010, that he was like the GM of the Canadian Olympic team that beat the U.S. in the gold medal game. They beat him in 02 as well, but no, I think 10 was the when Gretzky was in front office stuff. But he was retired, I think, by the time J.J. McCarthy was born.
Well, J.J. either way had a lot of great things to say about the Vikings, obviously, but he took it a step farther and said that most of the offensive guys I talked to in this process said they wanted to go to Minnesota. Yeah. So it was beyond just the, like, I'm happy to be here. This is the team I wanted to be. He said, no, like, guys at the combine, guys at some of the workout visits that we did or the facility visits with other players, they talked about Minnesota being a destination that these rookies wanted to go to, and especially offensive rookies, obviously. And so for a quarterback, this is arguably the best destination. I heard a bit of Drake May's presser in Boston, and he's getting asked about that being the worst situation possible.
Yeah, it might be. Their line. I mean, this was the team that traded for Vidarian Lowe last year because they saw him as an upgrade for what they had. So,
and he started 8 games.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's how badly they needed him or didn't need him or what. Nice guy. But it just didn't work out. Their offensive line.
This guy was just not proven.
Their offensive line is just not bad. You're right.
Yeah.
Incredibly raw for a player.
Yeah.
And to start as many games as he did last year, the whole O-line for the Patriots was just a mess. And for J.J. coming in, he's talking about how this is obviously going to be one of the best setups they could have. But I would still expect that from everything we've heard and everything we've seen from Kevin O'Connell, they're going to want to sit him and bring him along as slowly as possible.
Yeah, and I asked about that a little bit, and I was kind of just asking more about the process. He took it to say, you know, kind of took it to the lane of, you know, we're not putting a timetable on him necessarily, but there is a lot to learn. I mean, there's a lot for him to pick up. It's a lot for Sam Darnold to pick up. This is a complex offense. It's going to be more on his plate than he's had, certainly in Michigan, and might have had in a lot of other places he could have landed. So it's, and there's a lot of detail from what Kevin O'Connell wants from quarterbacks, from feet and eyes and hands and how you read things. I mean, all of those details of playing the position, they have a lot of people to help with it. Obviously, Kevin O'Connell's played in the NFL. Josh McCown played 17 years. Wes Phillips, the offensive coordinator, has a Super Bowl ring and is from a third-generation football family. Grant Udinski, the assistant QB coach, is beloved in this building. He's seen as a rising star. Chris O'Hara is still here. Your wide receiver coach played 17 years in the league, Keenan McCardle. So there are a lot of voices and a lot of, you know, wisdom you can tap into here. But, and O'Connell mentioned it a little bit, saying you wish you had more time. That is the thing that still bothers coaches, I think, and he's not going to say it publicly probably, but I think if you get coaches kind of talking candidly on the side, it's, we want more time in our off-season programs, but the CBA does not allow for it. And especially when you're trying to develop a quarterback, because there's just so much work to do. I think it's always this feeling of, I would kill for another, you know, 40 hours in a week to work with a guy that I just don't have because the rules don't allow it. And there's good reasons for that, but it does crunch things a little bit and probably then makes it so that they say, let's take our time and make sure this is fully formed before we put him on the field.
Yeah, not only what the offense asks, but honestly, what you see out of this transition from most of these quarterbacks, it's just a struggle. It doesn't matter if you're Bryce Young. And I know that's, we talk about bad situations. It's a rough situation for him, but you see guys come in all the time, and those CJ Strouds just don't happen overnight every year, to mix metaphor cliches or whatever. But these things just don't happen. So O'Connell knows that. He saw it last year with the backup quarterbacks coming in. And even though this offense is so talented at so many different positions, I think because of that, there's going to be some outside thinking of, well, put the kid in, let's go. Yeah. Why are you trusting this journeyman Sam Darnold to come in here and learn it? He's learning the offense too. But Sam Darnold's so much farther along in his NFL career and has been through the process of learning playbooks and failing and learning and failing. Yeah. There's going to be a reason why he's going to get the first crack at that and probably hold on to the job longer. I'm saying this in April, but it's probably going to be longer than people want.
Well, and it just, what a turn of events. I mean, for the last 2 years, the highest drafted quarterback at the TCO Performance Center was Kevin O'Connell. He was drafted higher than Kirk Cousins, higher than Nick Mullins, higher than Jaren Hall, higher than Sean Mannion. I mean, going down the line, I mean, I suppose when Kellen Mond was here for a minute, I can't remember what pick of the draft Kevin O'Connell was. That'd be the only other one. But in games that have mattered, Kevin O'Connell has never coached a quarterback who was drafted higher than him, and now you have a guy that was 10th overall, highest quarterback drafted in Vikings history, that is backing up, at least for now, a guy who was the third pick and was supposed to be the savior in New York not so long ago. So it's interesting just how much and how quickly this all changes, and it just kind of tells you, I mean, Sam Darnold is somewhat of a cautionary tale, I suppose, because, you know, you can sit here and say, hey, it's going to be great, they got their guy. It's possible they do. Possible that they found a guy that will be a star. But Sam Darnold is a reminder, kind of like you're talking about with Bryce Young, that if you get in the wrong situation, it can go sideways on you very, very quickly. Sam Darnold is on his fourth or fifth team now in 7 years, and this was a guy who was the third pick in the draft. So, and he's only 26, and everybody's kind of like, oh, he's done, he's washed. I mean, maybe, but I mean, you think about guys like Tony Romo, who was undrafted and didn't play for a long time, and then by the time he's in his 30s, he's figured things out because he's just seen enough and learned enough to play the position at a higher level. So it is such an odd process. Kevin O'Connell's talked about the quarterback journey a lot, and Sam Darnold is kind of a window into how many twists and turns that journey can take. And you know, there's no guarantee that for J.J. McCarthy it'll be just this sort of super expressway to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and it's going to be fascinating to see how he transitions, how he performs and plays, and what he can give this team, and frankly what this team needs considering how talented the offense is, and how we've heard Kwesi talk about, you know, the balance they've tried to strike with acquiring this quarterback for the future is acquiring the guy with enough talent, and if not, doing it with enough assets to put that talent around him. And for them not to send some godfather offer for number 4 overall to the Cardinals for JJ goes to show you the kind of dance they were playing there of waiting it out, and then still ending up getting him with that extra pick to get Dallas Turner, even though that leaves them with just 3 picks in 2025. It is their first rounder. They've still got their first rounder and then 2 fifth-round picks, I believe, in 2025 after dealing all these picks today.
And they'll get a third, probably a compensatory third, for the man of the hour, Kirk Cousins.
Oh, God.
And maybe they'll get something else with, I don't think the picks will come to them from tampering. The Falcons will probably just lose them. But,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. The NFL kind of makes that stuff up as they go.
Currently, the Vikings have 5 picks left in this draft. They will pick next at number 108 in the 4th round on Saturday, unless they trade back into the 2nd or 3rd rounds tomorrow. I don't see how they can do that.
Other than just to
be like, oh, you guys thought you had a Friday night off.
Right, right. I just
watch
can't,
this.
I don't know what assets you do it with, is, I guess is my question.
Like four and that's a long way to come up, though.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. Yeah.
You'd have to go up probably too far to entice anybody with anything else. I mean, you know, I suppose it's always possible. But,
Let's talk before we end then quick about, since the Vikings, you know, there's not a whole lot to preview tomorrow. They need cornerback help still. I don't know who's going to cover all these guys. But let's talk about what the NFC North did tonight and what we thought of that. The Bears obviously led things off with Caleb Williams. They took the Washington receiver. How do you pronounce his last name? Odunze? I don't even know. That just shows where I'm at with that. Because the Vikings weren't going to take a wide receiver. Terrion Arnold goes to the Lions at number 24 overall, one of the top corners. He was the top corner out of Alabama, frequently mocked as the top corner taken, but that instead was Kenyon Mitchell out of Toledo to the Eagles.
I wonder a little bit why the Vikings didn't. I mean, obviously they needed an edge rusher and they needed help at tackle. If it would have been, you know, Byron Murphy there, if that would have been an option for him, but I wonder how much they thought about a corner.
It almost makes you wonder if this corner, because I think the cornerback group has been talked about by people who evaluate such things as like
not quite as
well, maybe not as top heavy, but like really deep in the middle of like you can find one in day two or day three. Yeah. Vikings don't have picks, so I don't they can't.
Yeah,
other teams can
for now,
and maybe they didn't view the top end talent as good as the top end talent at the edge rush.
Yeah,
we're like. Maybe Dallas Turner's that. I don't know. I'm guessing. All right. And then the Packers closed it out for the division by taking offensive lineman Jordan Morgan out of Arizona with their pick at 25 overall. How much better did the Bears get?
I think quite a bit. I mean, their receivers now. I mean, when was the last time? And the answer may be never. No, it's not never, because it would have been like, well, I know what it would have been. It would have been Brandon Marshall and
Alshon Jeffrey.
Alshon Jeffrey, yes. Torching Chris Cook to the point where he wouldn't talk to us.
And Martellus Bennett on that team, too.
Yes, they did. He was also open on that play. We have pontificated on many, 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 many times in the 11 years since then.
I don't think anybody knows what game we're talking about.
The 2013 Week 2 loss to the Bears that sealed the Vikings' fate effectively because they were 0-2, having lost twice in the division. The Bears came down the field, scored in the last minute. Jay Cutler to one of the Bennetts, Earl or Martellus. I think it was Martellus.
Yeah,
but they had about four guys open on that play, and they call a coverage that they hadn't practiced in the red zone all week. Alan Williams called it, and that locker room was ready to revolt. That was still like the most tense post-game locker room I've ever been in. So that would have been the last time the Bears had receivers like this, when they now have DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, and Romo. Yeah, speaking of Romo, it would not be the first time that I have ever mispronounced the last name of a first-round pick on a draft show of some type. Shout out LaCron Twedwell, as I said it on the ESPN mock draft in 2016. And then Mr. Spielman called him Mr. Twedwell in the press conference. So I was just embodying the part maybe a little too much. Anyway, they have the receivers now. Cole Kmet's still there. The line probably still needs a little help, but they're better defensively. You have to figure out what Caleb Williams is going to be in year one and how quickly he can kind of take that offense somewhere, but I think they could be a lot better. And you have two of the final four teams in the division that have just about everybody back and both have a lot of picks in this draft. So I think the division's going to be pretty – it's going to look a lot different than it has.
Yeah, if Caleb Williams is one-tenth of Patrick Mahomes, has any kind of that special ability in his pinky nail, those painted pinky nails, he's going to dominate. He's going to be incredibly good because
– you do see some throws that look like some of the Mahomes stuff.
You hear so many people talk about this kid for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, you've talked about how he's been on O'Connell's radar, their radar for years, and, you know, the dream of getting him died, obviously, a long time ago.
Quasey liked him a lot, too.
But like this was viewed as a Trevor Lawrence type transcendent talent.
Yes.
And we haven't seen that type of talent since before him. It was what, Andrew Luck. So these type of talents where it's like consensus number one, there's no questioning it. We all know it months before it happens. That doesn't come along very often. So for the Bears to get that in a
Joe Burrow, maybe that guy too, yeah, I suppose. Yeah,
that's a good one. And so for the Bears to get that in a time where they're reloading, in a time where Ryan Poles' whole strip down to the brass tacks rebuild thing seems to be really working.
Yes.
We'll see. You know, you can win in March and April and lose.
Call it a non-competitive rebuild from what they've been, I suppose. Very true. Different.
Tons of teams have won this time of year and lost in the fall, but you bring up Keenan Allen, TJ Moore the year before. They brought in Montez Sweat last year. They're trying to rebuild. They signed DeAndre Swift in free agency as well.
Yeah, that's right. I knew they had one more piece there.
They've got a lot of talent that makes it hard for them to, it makes it hard for me to see them not be somewhat competitive. It really brings you back to the time where the Vikings are going to have to work for those wins again at Soldier Field in a way they haven't had to when it was Justin Fields or Tyson Bagent. So to me, they got a lot better. I thought the Lions getting one of the top corners at number 24 overall seems awfully nice for them after the way they spent their luxury draft picks on a running back and interior linebacker last year.
They could use corners, as Justin Jefferson could tell you.
That's true. And then the Packers beef up their offensive line the only way they know how, which is more picks, more high picks on the offensive line.
Yes. Well, David Bakhtiari being gone, I suppose that's some of the thought process there too. But they, I think, have a lot of picks in the top 100 yet. I mean, because they got the Jets second rounder from the Rodgers deal. And then I think there's maybe a comp in there. I think they have like five top 100 picks or something like that. So they're going to be on the clock a lot. And I think the Lions have four. So, yeah, every team in this division has more draft capital than the Vikings do. And every team in this division won at least as many games as the Vikings last year. And every team in this division, I guess the Packers had cap maneuvering to do, but the Bears had money to spend. The Lions had money to spend. So there are a lot. From a roster building standpoint, you cannot look at anybody else in this division right now and be like, boy, sucks to be them. I mean, I'm not saying it's bad to be the Vikings right now either, but the days of kind of the Lions are a gimme, the Bears are a gimme, we just have to worry about the Packers, it's us and the Packers. Yeah. That's not how this works anymore.
No, you're right. And this is one of the toughest, it seems on the paper, one of the toughest divisions going into 2024. For sure. So
It'll be fascinating to see how it plays out.
All right, guys. Well, this will be it for our episode, this episode of the Access Vikings podcast. We will talk to you next time after the NFL draft when the Vikings make all of those day three selections. We will see what happens. Please check out all of our work at StarTribune.com.